This is the BAM School Podcast, where we talk about business, adventure, and mission with your host, Buddy Rathmel.
All right, welcome to the BAM School Podcast. I am excited today to have my guest, Nick Haluski. He is a friend from X, and a lot of you will maybe know both of us from X. He's a little bit more popular than me, a little bit more business experience. So I was on his podcast 2 weeks ago. So I'm excited to be here hosting and having Nick on my podcast. Lots of fun. Also, Nick is flying blind. I gave him no heads up, nothing about what the podcast was about, any questions that I was going to ask him. I even threw it out to X to get some questions from those of you out in the real world. But Nick, welcome to the BAM School Podcast.
Thank you. That was a kind introduction. I don't know that I have more experience than you. That was like, that was nice of you to say. I don't think it was true though. I think you have.
Okay, I'll say more success.
I don't even know if that's true, man. You're the one who lived in Thailand for, or you know, wherever in Southeast Asia for 15 years.
Yeah, that was fun. But business wise, haven't you had a couple exits and all that kind of fun stuff?
Yeah, I've had two exits in the last 2 years, actually. Oh my gosh. It's exactly 2 years this month. That's weird to think about.
Nice.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Crazy.
So give us the 90-second like backstory. How did you get to here? Who is Nick Haluski? Haluski? Yeah. Am I saying
all
that right?
I'm gonna do a 90-second backstory. Let's see. Yeah. Market now, starting now. So I am one of nine children. I was born in Sacramento, California. My father is an immigrant. He is full-blooded Ukrainian, but was born in Germany, raised in Brazil, came to the United States when he was a teenager. He was a professional soccer player. So I grew up around immigrants, all kinds of different types of people. And I've always loved just meeting different people, seeing where they're from, what their history is, their experience, all that stuff. I moved to Southern California when I was 22. I thought I was going to be a musician. I met my wife shortly thereafter, and things changed. I decided to go back to school, went to the University of Southern California, got an MBA from UCLA. And during that time period, I knew that I wanted to do something fun and that I could take advantage of my curiosity and love of solving problems. And so I got into healthcare. I worked in home health and hospice for 10 years. I bought my first healthcare company in 2020. A few months later, I started a hospice from scratch. I grew both of those businesses concurrently. And then in June of 2022, I sold the first healthcare company, medical billing company. And in June of 2023, last year, a year ago, I sold my home health and hospice company. And now I'm trying to figure out what I want to do by being an influencer. So it's been a great ride.
Nice. That's awesome. Wait, so I thought you had some existing businesses now.
I do. Yeah. So Chris Kerner, yeah. Mobile Home Park guy, we own an RV park. We own a crypto mining company that sells crypto mining hardware. We have a tree trimming business based in Dallas, and then we have an AI healthcare startup that we've invested in as well. Those businesses are not like the medical billing, medical practice management company was a $7 million company. The home health and hospice was an $11 million company. Yeah. Those were much larger businesses. The businesses that we have now are probably combined, I don't know, $7 or $8 million a year in sales. Yeah. So they're just not as big as those other ones.
So when you said 11 million, 7 million, that was top line revenue.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Nice. Cool.
Yeah. They were good size.
Yeah. Well, congratulations on those exits.
Thank you.
So what are you still doing in America? Not sailing the Caribbean on your yacht.
Well, I tell people I made enough money to never have to work somewhere I don't want to work again, but I didn't make enough money to buy an island. So that's why I'm not in the Caribbean.
Yeah.
And, my wife's a lot less risk, or my wife is a lot more risk averse than I am. So
yeah,
I don't think we'll be living that lifestyle anytime soon, but the truth is I have four kids under 10, man. Have you ever tried to travel with young kids? It's the worst.
Yeah, it is. And how many are boys and girls?
All boys.
All boys. Oh my goodness.
All boys. Yeah.
Yeah. That makes for some insane traveling. I had two girls, one boy. So like, you know, my wife one time flew like Trans-Pacific, whatever that ocean is over there, all by herself, all three kids under five.
Oh my gosh.
But two of them were girls. It's a totally different story.
That is really true. I'll go to church and I'll see these little girls who are my boys' ages, and they're like sitting there nicely with their coloring book or sharing with their siblings. My kids are like, you know, pulling their pants down and peeing in the corner. I'm just like, what? It definitely makes me feel like, okay, boys and girls are just different. It's okay. Yeah. They're just different.
Yeah. So we're going to start this pod with some questions from the interwebs, courtesy of X.
Cool. I'm excited.
Yeah. So these are questions that people, when I said, I'm having co-founders Nick on the podcast, what should I ask him? I didn't give people a lot of time, but, Kaleem asked, what makes a good chief of staff for a biz like his? So you have all different kinds of businesses. So you kind of, you really are your own chief of staff.
I would guess. So that's a really good question. Chris and I have these businesses, and then we also have a ton of ideas on top of that. We're, you know, ADHD on Ritalin, hopped up on Mountain Dew at the same time. So there's always like a new idea, a new shiny ball. And we decided that the businesses that we have a lot of potential. The tree trimming business in Dallas has been great, but it has a huge potential to scale. Same with the AI company, same with the crypto mining company. But neither one of us really want to get in the weeds and operate those businesses.
Yeah.
So we decided, hey, we have more ideas than we know what to do with. We have more opportunities than we know what to capitalize on. Let's hire a chief of staff that can come in and just make sure the trains run on time. Make sure that all of our systems are clean. Make sure that we all are using the same CRM. We have the same processes. That our, you know, application process is consistent across organizations. We're paying people in the same way. We are evaluating opportunities in the same way. We now have the chief of staff is now helping us just have a coordinated strategy around branding and around media. So it was really kind of to bring an adult into the room to make sure that we had some structure to the madness that is our ideas and our energy. And it's been awesome. His name's Kamal. He's from Canada. Bright, hardworking. I can't believe the applicants that we got, buddy. It was nuts. Like we were like, hey, we're hiring for this position. And we got people, hey, I'm a district manager of $200 million worth of revenue for Target. Or I work for PwC, or like these like very high caliber MBA experienced individuals. And Chris and I are like, these guys are applying to work with like us. We're just a couple of jerk offs. Like why are they applying here? But we got our pick of the litter, and Kamal's fantastic, and he's just been really helpful and influential in getting our businesses organized so that we can add fuel to the fire and scale.
That's awesome. I didn't even see the chief of staff post. So that was, I didn't know if that was like a real question or what. So yeah, but Tyler Purcell.
Before you get to Tyler, I just want to expand on it just a little bit. Like Chris and I have been having a lot of these conversations.
Yeah.
And it's we're fortunate on the one hand because we're able to focus on our superpowers. So we get to ask that question. Like, well, what's our superpower? Chris's superpower is growth. Chris gets to think about how do I add jet fuel to the fire? My superpower is people, relationships, deals. My superpower is not in systems, processes, managing day-to-day operations. So we were like, okay, well, let's take the thing that is not our superpower, assign it to somebody, and then free ourselves up to work on our superpowers, because that's going to be more creative for our business than us focusing on things that are not in our wheelhouse. So that was the thinking behind hiring a chief of staff.
Yeah, that's awesome. It's not healthy for me to follow you guys and listen to the pods and stuff, because I'm like, just yesterday, Chris posted about trying to be the person where your tree company just grinds stumps. And I was like, that's a great idea. How much is a stump grinder? And I'm like, what am I even thinking? And part of it is I've thought about the tree business, and I'm like, yeah, you totally could do that. And you could start at so low risk where you get, you know, stumps and you just get them on the weekend, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. You rent the grinder for $500 for the weekend and you.
Here's the problem, buddy. Here's the problem is like that makes sense and that's attractive. Yeah. But it's a distraction.
Totally.
Like, is that the highest and best use of your time? I don't know the answer to that question. You know the answer to that question.
Yeah.
I know how it is for Chris and I. And for many years, I know Chris in particular was like, he would let the distractions distract him, and he's getting a lot more focused now. But that's part of the problem is like, okay, well, cool. We have all these ideas.
Yeah.
Is it best suited for us to chase those rabbits, or should we get somebody in who can help us execute on those things? And that, you're just like hitting the nail on that. I think that's why a part of the reason why Chris's account is so popular is because it's like, oh yeah, I could do that. Oh yeah, that does make sense. It's just so seductive.
Yeah. Well, and the funny thing is my latest seduction was I was by the beach where I've always wanted to live, not particularly this beach, Surf City, North Carolina. But my friend was showing me like where he wanted to develop a mobile home park and what he wanted to do there. He's got the land already. And I'm like, dude, you have this other project. Now, I don't know how much he has into it, but like the top line is like 10 million on the front end plus way more monthly. And I just was like, you know, I know we actually became friends partially because of one of his other projects. And I'm like, you got this. I'm like, if I were you, I would just do this one project. Then all of these others are irrelevant. Like, you know, it's, I don't know the time frame, but probably in like a 2-year project. And so the next day we're sitting on the beach and he goes, hey, if you want to do that RV park, you know, we can work out a deal. You can do it and pay me for the land later or whatever, you know? And so then I'm just sitting there running the numbers and I'm like, oh, this is tempting, but we'll see. My wife and I we're going back in 2 weeks and for the 4th of July, and we'll look at the land and then I'll have a little bit more clear headedness. Although the problem is my wife is like, this is like way more, this is real estate. I understand this Google stuff you do. I don't understand.
Yeah. So. I think that's the biggest challenge in being an entrepreneur. I think it's the biggest thing that keeps us from being as successful as we could be.
Yeah.
Is there are too many opportunities. It's not that there aren't enough opportunities. There are too many. And it's hard to say no. It's hard to be focused.
Yeah. So what has allowed you to stay focused?
It's funny you say that, because I used to think I was not focused. And then I've met many people recently and I'm like, oh, okay, I guess I did a decent job of it.
Yeah.
My brother-in-law is the best example of this that I know. He has a company that he's built from scratch that's $200-300 million company over the last 7 years. And I'm always bugging him. I'm always like, dude, you could do a podcast, you could do speaking, you could start this company, you could invest here. And he's like, I can't let myself get distracted. Otherwise the main thing will suffer. And so I think for me, it's just been when I had those businesses, it was like, okay, I can't even engage with Twitter. I didn't start Twitter until I sold those businesses. Yeah. I started really going on Twitter July 12th, 2023. I know the date because it's like ingrained in my mind. Had I gone into Twitter before that, the businesses would have suffered.
Yeah.
They just would have, because I would have been distracted. And I think for me, it was like, okay, that'll come at a time. I've got to secure the bag, so to speak. I've got to get my big win now.
Yeah.
Once that happens, then I can do whatever I want. And to be honest, the last year has been hard because I've been like a kid in a candy shop and I'm like, oh, that looks good. Oh, that looks interesting. Oh, I'll try this.
Yeah.
And, you know, my wife's kind of looking at me like, okay, I'm happy you're fulfilled.
Yeah.
But is this going to turn into anything? Like, what are we doing here? It's, you know, I feel like I've swung totally the other way. But again, to reiterate and answer your question, for me, it was just, I needed to get that first like big win under my belt to feel like, okay, I'm secure. My family's future is secure. We're in a good place. Now I can be a little bit crazier with the risks that I take, or I can be a little bit more distracted in the things that I'm doing. But I can feel myself like at some point, and it could be this podcasting thing. Yeah. I'm going to get back to the like, okay, here's my one thing. I'm back on that train.
Yeah. Well, you're really, really good. I think you're an amazing host because you're like the most curious person. And I've listened to a few of your podcasts and I was on your podcast and
you
like just dive into things. And then it's like you're not thinking about anything else. And then you're right honed in on that thing. And I was, I think you could kill it if you decide Yeah, I'm going off. Your people thing and the curious thing, which leads me into the question from Tyler Purcell. What hair product does Nick use?
Freaking Tyler. Honestly, I'll be honest with what I use. Whatever conditioner my wife has is what I use.
Yeah. All right.
I my hair's wet. After I get out of the shower, I put conditioner in and I just leave it in my hair.
Yeah.
And so.
All right. Well, Tyler will be happy.
I wish I had a better answer.
Yeah. So SMB Journey wants to know, how do you pump out all these podcasts?
I like SMB Journey. Did you see his, he posted on Father's Day, this video that his wife created for him. Did you see that?
I did not.
You need to go watch that. It was beautiful. It was like a, not time lapse, but it was like a period of time of basically him becoming a father.
Yeah.
And anyways, it was beautiful. I shed a tear. It was like really, really, really sweet.
That's cool. I will have to check it out.
Yeah. I've recorded 45 podcasts over the last 35 calendar days. Dude. And if you take into consideration, I don't record on Saturdays or Sundays.
Yeah.
It's probably closer to like 25 days that I've been recording podcasts.
That's awesome.
It's not healthy. I'll tell you that, SMB Journey. I tend to get really obsessed with things. And the reason that I wanted to slam it in is I really like this idea of podcasting. I love people. I love learning about things.
Yeah.
And for me, I'm like, I could build a network. I could build a bunch of relationships, but I could also do something that gives me energy. I also think this could be a journal for my kids 20 years from now. Yeah. They're watching the videos of dad when he was, 38, just seeing how he acted. Yeah. But I also know that I suck at it. And in order for me to become better at something, I just got to put in the reps, put in the time, just do it, do. So I thought, okay, if I release one podcast a week, in the course of a year, I release 52 podcasts. All right. What if I tried to speed that up so that I could get a year's worth of experience in like 3 months? And I'm like almost there. I'm at 45. I'm almost to the 52. I'd have to actually look after today. I think I might be closer than that. So it was my goal, and it's honestly been just a ton of work. I'm really lucky. I have an executive assistant, Kelly. She's been fantastic, like interacting with everybody. So like she coordinated your schedule and getting you on the calendar and sending you the questions beforehand. And I wouldn't have been able to do it without her help, but, it's still been, it's been a lot of, it's much to my wife's chagrin. It's been a lot of work.
Yeah, no, I'm for real. You can't crank out that many. And that's awesome. Do you have somebody that's also editing and publishing for you?
Yeah. So Chris and I share a guy, Mohammed.
Okay.
He edits all of our videos.
Yeah.
We publish on Buzzsprout. He does the editing for the video itself and for the audio, sends us the files. We then upload those to Buzzsprout and to YouTube. We have a guy, Simon, who does our thumbnails. Laura has been working on posting our content. So that stuff's been good, but we haven't yet outsourced the creation of any of our content. So like nobody's writing any posts for us. Nobody's doing any of that stuff.
Yeah, that's awesome. So SMB Journey has one more question.
Yeah.
Do you really talk about Sam Parr in your sleep?
I love to have fun, and I was trying to think of something creative to say, and I was like, Sam's kind of like a girl's name, right?
Yeah.
Who is Sam Parr? No, I don't talk about Sam Parr in my sleep.
All right. And the very last one from Austin Linney. What about him from his childhood makes him smile so much and brings so much joy? Was it something he always had, or was it an outlook he cultivated?
That is very nice of Austin to say. Wow.
Yeah.
I wish it was something I said, I could say that was a conscious choice. I'm very lucky that I have a happy predisposition. I'm one of nine kids. My twin sister is severely developmentally delayed. My parents are very poor. They never made more than $30,000 a year. Growing up, we were on welfare. I have, five half siblings. We adopted my cousins because my aunt, unfortunately, was a drug addict. So I grew up in a really weird environment, but I honestly never realized we were poor. I never really realized that we had a hard situation because that was just my personality. I just was always kind of looking on the bright side of things. And it's a blessing and a curse. It's a blessing in the sense that I don't remember the bad stuff. It's also a curse because I also don't remember the good stuff.
Yeah.
So it kind of goes both ways, unfortunately, but I would take this, you know, 10 times out of 10. I'm very, very fortunate that I don't have sort of the glasses half empty personality, or, you know, people are constantly trying to take advantage of me. I think that would be a really miserable way to live. Yeah. So I'm just lucky.
Yeah. I read a phrase once that said delusional positivity works. And, I talk about it with my wife because she uses this phrase delulu. Like when somebody's crazy, they're delulu. But I'm like, you know, if you're going to be crazy, at least be crazy on the positive side of things, you know, not on the negative. Or
I am naturally optimistic. And I do think we can figure out, everything's figure outable.
Yeah, totally.
There's very, very, very few things that are not figure outable. And if somebody else, like if someone's on the other side of a situation and we may be adversaries in the moment, and I need to get something and you need to get something, I still believe there's a way for you and I to figure out how it can be a win-win for us. Yeah, and I just need to understand your perspective. You need to understand mine and we can work together. I think if we're both motivated well, like we can figure stuff out. So that's just a fundamental belief I have.
Yeah, absolutely. So you said that you got fired from a job while your wife was in labor. Tell me that story. How did that all go down?
So I took a job, when was it? 8 years ago. Jeez, that's crazy. I took a job 8 years ago with some friends of mine. Great guys. They were building a company. They had just started. I had worked with them before, and then they split out and started their own company, and they recruited me, and they were like, hey, come run this segment for us. So I did. And I'd been upfront with them. I said, I really want equity. I don't want to just leave this job. I was making really good money at the time. I think I was making like $180,000 a year, 8 years ago, which for me, I felt like I was freaking king of the world. And I had turned down a job. I remember this. I turned down a job making $250,000 a year. And I remember my wife was like, I hope this is a good decision. So I took this job and grew that segment of the company. And the guys that I've been working with told me like, okay, we're going to give you 3% equity. And for that 3%, you need to co-sign on a loan for us to buy an acquisition. And I was done. Let's freaking do this thing. I'm excited, right?
Oh my goodness, you went for that?
3%. Yeah, I know. I'm like, 3%? I could have like, Jess, we could have like $1 million or $2 million. And if this goes really well, maybe even $3 million. You know, I'm like stoked. I grew up super poor. So I thought I won the lottery. Well, they had some struggles in other parts of their business, some acquisitions that I wasn't a part of. It was a grind, and they were running into some cash flow issues because of the acquisitions that they had purchased. The government had levied their accounts because of the shady previous owners. And my wife was pregnant, and I get a text from them the day she goes into labor. Oh, sorry. Before then, we met in December, and they were like, hey, Nick, we're ready for you to earn your equity. I'm like, oh, okay. We want you to buy one of our businesses from us, and we're going to use that money as working capital for the business, for the rest of the businesses, and we'll pay it back over time. And I was like, so I need to buy an existing business, and I'm going to sign like personal guarantee. My house is going to be on the line because we're having cash flow problems. And they're like, yeah. I'm like, well, that wasn't really what we talked about. And the risk there is insane. Like I have the same downside as you guys, but nowhere near the upside. Like that doesn't work for me. Either I need more equity or it doesn't work for me. And they weren't willing to give more equity. Understandable. And so I was like, well, I'm not going to leave you today, but I need something with more equity. And so we'd been working towards figuring out maybe another opportunity. Maybe I did another service line with them, or maybe we did something on our own. Anyways, I get this text from them, February 18th, my wife's going into labor, and it's like, hey man, we're in Laverne. Can you meet for lunch or breakfast? Well, I don't remember. And I looked at my wife and I was like, this is kind of weird. I got a text from the guys. She's like, well, you should go. I'm like, but you're in labor. It's like, Nick, it's not going to take that long. You know, this is our fourth. Yeah. This is our fourth son. And so like we knew the drill at this point.
Yeah.
So I'm like, okay, I'll go. And you know, something's up, right? Like it was a weird text to get. And so it was like, okay, this is going to stress me out if we don't go. So I went like 5 minutes from my house, meet with them. And basically they tell me, hey, look, we had to get outside investment. Part of the agreement of the outside investment is that we have to cut staff. They know about your conversations with equity. They know you're not long for this role. We need to fire you. And I was like, you know, just shocked.
Yeah.
So I'm like, okay, is today my last day? Like, no. February 28th is your last day. I'm like, okay, that's like, that's less than 2 weeks away. My wife's literally in labor right now. And so I was hot. I mean, I was just, yeah. I was freaking livid. And they were, how do I describe it? I don't know if ashamed is the right word, but they knew, right? Yeah. Like they knew it sucked. But at the same time, they were in a really crappy situation. They didn't, have any choice. They had to go get outside investment. Looking back, I understand a lot more than I did at the time. At the time, I was just like, well, F you guys, you know how much I sacrificed and I did all this stuff. How dare you do this to me? And, you know, and I said and did some things to them that I regret, frankly.
Yeah.
But my wife was like, hey, look, it is what it is. We're going to figure this out, but your son's being born today. Can you just be present? So my son was born February 19th. I call him my 2 weeks to slow the spread baby because that's when he was, that's when he was born, February 19th, 2020, when we were all like, don't worry guys, it's just 2 weeks to slow the spread. And, it ended up being one of the biggest blessings I've ever had.
Yeah.
You know, I was working in healthcare
at
multiple locations in Southern California. So I was gone 4 days a week. I was in a different city almost every night. And had I been in that role when COVID hit, I would have been gone all the time, right? Like my son had just been born and I would have been gone dealing with this COVID stuff. It would have been highly stressful. And so in many ways, I'm very grateful that I didn't have to do that. It also allowed me to be home with my son and my wife. We ended up moving to Idaho and like a month later, bought a house, bought my first business, started a business and, you know, just, it propelled the best few years that I've had since then.
Yeah.
And that whole experience, while it sucked, was also a testament to me of you just never know what good is waiting for you on the other side of a crappy situation.
Yeah, that's for sure. And often, I mean, now when I look back, some of those dark moments, like I'm really grateful for them in a way. It's like, not just because it propelled you into something new, but even like what happens to you in the process, you know? And you know, and now like, not that you would like to get screwed in a deal again, but you would handle it differently this time. You know what I mean?
Like
you might not even get into the situation to start with because you've learned some things that, so did you co-sign on a loan when you jumped into that for the 3% equity or did that never?
No, because it came like, it was time, right? Like, hey, Nick, you're going to get your equity sign. And it had been almost 2 years in between the initial conversation of 3% and okay, we're ready for the equity. So like, you know, a lot had changed during that period of time. I had changed a lot. Their business had changed a lot. And so I was already getting the place where you were when I first said it, which was like, what? 3% to sign on a loan.
Yeah.
So yeah, by the time we were having that conversation, it was like, I love you guys, but I can't unless I have more upside. And they said they were unwilling to give me more upside and it was their business. Yeah. Like I get it. No matter how I might've felt about it, I understand the decision they made. But it sucked. It definitely sucked.
Yeah. No other way to say that. So tell me about you bought this first business in Idaho and that business was which one was that? Was that the?
Yeah. So, I met with them in December. We had the conversation about signing on the loan and getting equity.
Yeah.
I get fired at the end of February, right? So there's 2 months in there, January and February, essentially, that I was already looking for a business. I was already looking because I knew that I wasn't long for the role.
Yeah.
Anyways, I told them I was not going to leave them high and dry, but I had to just make sure that I was covered. So I had already started negotiating a business here in Boise, Idaho. And I found that business, negotiated it, met with the seller, got the financing lined up. And right as we're, you know, close to getting in the closing process, my brother-in-law who lives up here calls me up and is like, hey, you should start a home health and hospice with us. And he owns a company with some skilled nursing facilities. So I thought, yeah, that's a no-brainer. That's what I've been doing in the past. I should totally do that. But what am I going to do with this billing company that I'm about to buy? Then I have another brother-in-law who I thought he'd be great to run it. So I brought my brother-in-law, Danny, up. He ran that medical billing company, gave him equity in order to run that. And then I focused all my time and energy on the home health and hospice. So because we had gotten it so far down the road, the medical billing company, I didn't want to lose that opportunity. I just felt like, hey, that was the way, the thing that was going to help give me the freedom for the rest of my life. And Danny, to his credit, came up, he ran it. I didn't do anything with that business. Yeah. I was able to focus on the home health and hospice. So for 2 years, he runs the medical billing company. I'm growing this home health and hospice from scratch here in Boise. And I just kind of saw the writing on the wall once the Fed started talking about inflation, talking about interest rates. And this was the end of 2021. And so I had a conversation with Danny, my brother-in-law, and was like, hey, I think we should sell. I mean, asset prices are nuts. We bought at the COVID low. We should probably just sell right now. Danny wanted to do some things where he had more equity and more upside. I was focusing only on the home health and hospice. So I thought, you know, it's a good time to exit. So we ended up selling the company in June. We started looking at that in December. We ended up selling that in June, and it was, you know, tripled our investment. Timing. It was really lucky. It was a good company, and we just had really good timing with it. And then the home health and hospice, I continued to grow, and my partners in the home health and hospice, they own a skilled nursing facility company. So it was four of them and one of me. So it was five of us, five equal partners, but the four of them really wanted to double down on their skilled nursing business. And so they said, we're not going to continue to grow this home health and hospice. They knew that I wanted to. And so we decided, hey, let's sell this home health and hospice and they can redeploy the capital. I have a clean break. Great. And so last June we sold that company, funnily enough, to the first home health and hospice that I ever worked for. And I worked for them for about 8 months. So
nice.
Sorry. I just kept talking. I probably should have interject, but
that was good. No, I was just curious how those things went together and how you're able to do two at once. So that makes way more sense. I was picturing you like doing the Steve Jobs thing of I work over here at Pixar in the morning. I hop in my Mercedes. I drive 90 miles an hour to Apple in the afternoon and make it all work. I should have said
that. That's what I did. Yeah. That's what I did. I worked, I worked 25 hours a day, 8 days a week.
Nice. Yeah. No, that's really cool. And so of the things that you're working on now, you talked about working in your superpower, you know, people, maybe podcasting, but your part of the partnership, what have you enjoyed the most out of that?
With what I'm working on now or with Chris?
Yeah. With Chris. Isn't what you're working on now and Chris, aren't those the same, or do you have external projects that are outside of your partnership with Chris?
Well, I mean, I would say like the podcast, right? Me trying to do a podcast would be potentially not the same thing as the stuff that I'm doing with Chris. So I guess that's where kind of my mind was going.
Gotcha.
The most enjoyable thing is just getting to work with my best friend. You know, we've known each other for almost 20 years. We get each other really well, and it's just fun.
That's cool.
To get to work together, ideate together, execute together.
Yeah. That's cool. So you guys met in college?
We actually met as Mormon missionaries.
Okay. Where did you do your tour of duty?
Yeah, Budapest, Hungary. Nice. I was his trainer. So he was brand new to the country. He got placed with me and I trained him for 3 months, and we just hit it off, and we've just stayed friends ever since then. We're both very similar but very different. Like, we have very similar experiences, but our personalities are very he's an introvert. does not like people. I love people. Anyways, yeah, it's been a very meaningful friendship for me.
That's cool. That's really cool. Are you both part of the LDS still?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Cool. All right. So you have these things out there, maybe people, maybe podcast. What are some of your dreams outside of the business world that you want to see in the next 5 to 10 years fulfilled?
Personal dreams?
Yeah.
I want to see, you know, my oldest son is 10.
Yeah.
And then my next is 7, and then a 4 and 2-year-old. I'm really excited to just see them become the young men that they're going to be and to be a part of that.
Yeah.
I've gotten to coach a couple of my son's teams, and you know, my oldest son, he's outgrown my usefulness as a coach. He needs a coach who knows what he's doing now.
Yeah.
But he's starting to grow into things that I actually do know some things about. He's interested in history. He loves to learn about the way things work. He likes hearing about business or about, I'm working on a podcast. So that's been a really fun experience to start thinking about how can I help him understand mechanics of these things so that he's ready for it as he gets older.
Yeah.
Business, for example. I can't wait to help him understand the fundamentals of how to run a business, how to evaluate a business, how to decide what business is good for you, those types of things. So I'd say over the next 5 to 10 years would be figuring out a way to help my boys develop into useful young men, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah. That's really cool. What are some of your philosophies of parenting if you had to like boil down your top three? Like, this is what I, you know, how I go about
parenting. Let my wife do it. she's better than me. One of the things that I've been not working on, but just been thinking about a lot is, I don't know if this was happened to you when you were a kid, but remember when you like would ask an adult something and they'd say some form of because I said so, or they'd make up some outlandish reason where it's like, hey, don't go in those bushes. There's alligators in there.
Yeah.
And there weren't alligators. You know what I mean? They were just like trying to get you to comply.
Yeah.
I really try not to do those things. And it's hard not to, but I really try to focus on helping my kids understand the why behind things.
Yeah.
Like, why do we do things? Why don't we play sports on Sundays? Why don't we swear? Why do we clean up after ourselves? Why, you know, all those things. I enjoy those conversations because I don't know. I think you're religious, right, buddy?
Yeah.
You know, kids, especially kids who grew up in very strict religious environments, tend to rebel. But I found it's the kids that tend to rebel are the ones who had the parents who just like didn't explain anything to them. It was just compliance, right? Like, and you know, Christ never says, if you fear me, keep my commandments. Christ says, if you love me, keep my commandments, right? And you can't love something that you don't understand. So I just am a big believer in helping them understand the why behind certain things.
Yeah. One of the things that we did often in the stage that you're about to enter into was like our kid would say, can we go to that movie or can I do this thing? And often we would say, once they got to be 12, 13, 14, we would say, well, what do you think?
Yeah.
What's good for your soul? You know, what, you know, and just put it back onto them. And we gave our kids a ton of freedom. Like, we were in a unique situation living in Thailand. And they were very trustworthy and we had lots of conversations about a lot of different things. So, you know, a couple nights when my daughter didn't come home, I knew she was at her best friend's house, 150 meters away. But like the fourth time I was like, listen, Adrian, by 10 o'clock, I need to know what house you are sleeping in, you know? and just have that part of the conversation. But the piece of like, as much as possible, helping them to think through, should I do this or should I not? Or what's the best thing? And often, like you're saying, like, I totally agree, like having laws with no reason behind it or no thought put into it is just the worst thing. It's like, you know, I mean, I think I would have rebelled if I had had a lot of like, this is the way that it's going to be. Like when I was 18 and said I wanted to hitchhike across the country, my dad's like, sweet, let's buy your backpack and one-way ticket from Frankfurt to LA as your graduation gift, you know?
And that's amazing.
Yeah. So that freedom piece was there, but
I'm very, 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 very lucky. My wife is incredible. She is so freaking patient and has the discipline to not make the easy choice.
Yeah.
So that when our kids are having a hard time and when they're struggling with something, she's not just like, oh, okay, yeah, whatever, do whatever you want. Or, you know, flippant. She'll sit, she'll talk. And she's just been an incredible example to me. And it's been very inspiring to me to try and model that behavior. Cause I don't have, I'm not as good at that naturally as she is. And I'm still not great at it, but seeing her act that way has just made me want to be so much better.
Yeah. That's really great. One of the things that I always used to say to my wife is like, don't react. Like, just practice like the kids coming home saying, hey, I'm pregnant, I'm whatever. And just being like, oh, okay, that's, you know, nice. Cause my wife is like an alarmist. So she's always like, but she is a far more patient listener than me. My wife is the same. She'll listen to the kids for 2 hours when I'm like wanting to correct things that are wrong in their thinking or where things are going.
Yeah.
Or whatever. So a lot of listeners of the BAM School podcast are people that are interested in business adventure and mission. Okay. And that younger, like 20 something age group. So what one piece of advice would you give the 20 something that is thinking of going into business? Maybe they've got a job that they went to college for, but they're interested in business right now. What one or two things would you say to that person?
I would say, do it.
Nice.
That's the short answer. The long answer is you just have no idea how free you are in your 20s. You have no idea how free you are until you're 30s, 40s and have 4 kids and a house and a mortgage and a car payment and credit cards and the things that you thought you wanted to do later and that you would get around to later. You can't do anymore because you don't have the financial wherewithal to continue your lifestyle that you've become accustomed to. So I think for people in their 20s, I would say take risks, fail fast, dream big, go out and actually try and do things. I'm reminded of this quote that I love, which is good decisions come from experience. Mm. And experience comes from bad decisions. Like you can't get to the good without going through the bad.
Yeah.
And I'm just a big believer. That's why I did so many podcasts in such a short period of time. I'm like, okay, I just got to get through the suck. I'm going to be in it. That's okay. I just got to get through it as quickly as possible. So for you in your 20s, go do something that's going to suck. You're going to suck. That's okay. Who cares?
Yeah.
Who cares what anybody thinks?
Yeah, that's awesome. Great advice. So Nick, tell us the name of your podcast and where can people connect with you?
My podcast is called Nickonomics. It's on the economics of small business. You can find it on YouTube, Spotify or Apple. And you can find me most regularly on Twitter, co-founders Nick. Yeah, buddy, this was awesome. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, thanks so much for being on the pod.
Of course. Till next time.
Till next time.
BAM School, facilitating a global self-funding disciple-making movement through business. Thanks for tuning in to the BAM School podcast. Find show notes, free courses, resources, and more at 4BAM.com.